Just gonna fucking crack. Just gonna fucking crack. Just gonna fucking crack.
JB?
Hi.
Hiya, how are you?
Grant.
Good.
Grant. David there?
Yep.
John.
Hiya.
How's it going?
Grant.
What's up today?
I don't know, making nice progress.
You're abusing that guarantee. You're paying too much in Germany, I heard now as well. Fucking ridiculous, John.
Deutschland, Deutschland, überall.
I had a mom this morning. I should be recording these calls. Fucking cracking. He's making notes.
Deutschland, Deutschland, überall. Deutschland, Deutschland, überall. Deutschland, 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 Deutschland,
eine multiethnische Landregion, wo Leben und Nobel keinen interessieren, wo alle Menschen ihr Echt verlieren. Da kann eigentlich nur noch eins passieren: Deutschland muss sterben, damit wir leben können. 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 Schwarz ist der Himmel, rot ist die Erde. Gold sind die Hände der Bonzenschweine. Doch der Bundesrat, der stürzt bald ab. Denn Deutschland betragen dich zu knapp. Wo Faschisten Multis das Land regieren, wo Leben und Umwelt keinen interessieren, wo alle Menschen ihr Ich verlieren. Da kann eigentlich nur noch eins passieren: Deutschland muss sterben, damit wir leben können. 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 Raketen und Panzer den Frieden sichern, AKWs und Computer das Leben verbessern, bewaffnete Roboter überall. Doch Deutschland, wir bringen dich zu Fall. Deutschland muss sterben, damit wir leben können. Deutschland muss sterben, damit wir leben können. Deutschland muss sterben, damit wir leben können. Deutschland muss sterben, damit wir leben können.
Deutschland verrecke,
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 Just got a fucking crack.
I would love to reverse things for a day. A short break for those who say it's all okay. I'd have an MTV where every male celebrity was dancing on a pole in pants while all the female fully clothed stood back just singing as they can because that's their talent. For just one day, the women's lifestyle section of the magazine rack stand would see a sea of choice of topics, not just cooking home or looking grand, but politics and sport and art, design and science, top shelf porn, and watch as men all look forlorn and wonder why their lifestyle section is full of naked pouting men on covers, licking gadgets in their underwear. For just one day. I swear I'd scream to see young male celebrities standing on TV next to 50-year-old female co-presenters watching as this token eye candy giggles politely at everything she says. I said for just one day I would pay to see a newspaper take a double spread about what the president eats for tea. 10 pages to talk about David Cameron's choice of socks and hand cream while focusing on Kate Middleton's degree and how she feels about personal freedom. Next to images of Prince William's top 10 jackets worn this summer for just one day, I'd read the sports pages and undercover news reporting without watching as men gawp at 18-year-old tits while I'm trying to make the point that women can be more than this, and page 3 licks should be in specialist magazines, not newspapers anyone can grab and read. And for just one day, I wonder what would happen if there were airbrushed, half-dressed, posed male teens on the front of every woman's magazine, and airbrushed, half-dressed, posed male teens on the front of every man's magazine, and airbrushed, half-dressed, posed male teens on the front of every shop window, and airbrushed, half-dressed, posed men on the front of every TV screen, and loads of fully dressed women in photos everywhere. Cameras staring at their faces in shoulder shots, their wrinkles photoshopped deeper like every male magazine man feature for just one day. Music award ceremonies would award Rihanna for her singing and think about not giving awards to Chris Brown, and women with amazing voices would be awarded for their amazing voices and they would show their amazing voices on stage by singing, and men with amazing voices would be awarded for their amazing voices and they would show their amazing voices on stage by singing whilst also shaking their crotch, pretending to shag the floor, snogging other men with amazing voices while dancing around poles in gold string jock straps and swimming trunks and lunging forward and bending over with cameras pointed at their asses. For just one day, I'd like to go to parties where the women like the men dress for the weather and walk the high street to the club in coats and jumpers as the rain and snow falls down for just one day. And for just one day, I might hear those men around me say, for fuck's sake, I don't like gay porn, so why do I have to watch naked fucking men all day? And I might hear those men say, is it really okay to show two men in G-strings pretending to fuck one another in a dance routine on X Factor at 7 o'clock in front of my son? And I might hear those men say, is it not enough that he's an amazing singer or rapper or songwriter and musician? Why does he have to wear a flashing crocodile tooth jockstrap every time he performs on stage? And I might hear those men say, maybe I might hear those men say, okay, I get it. You're not just on your period. Perhaps you have a point. Maybe you're not just jealous of her tits. Maybe there's more to this than you being annoyed by the way women are portrayed in the media. And for just one day, I might wake up and not worry about my daughter growing up to be a woman in this place where newspapers prey on teenage tits and tell me this is all okay for just one day. I'd like to see what those men who mock me say if everything was the other way around.
Yeah, Lord,
blah, blah, blah.
Got the world voices, so you make it. You advertise that you wouldn't take it ill. It's just only the best for you. And the years of my life, someday was so good, but now and again I fear I was a coward. The hole in my soul, it's tattered for all these tears. Well, I don't see it that way, away, away. Whatever today, the dancing will say really mean it has something more. Something's gonna change. Away, away, you gotta be safe. But how do they know when you've never seen it? And what will you do when they forget your name? When you're up again, another one. Face, I know when I should live in disgrace. I dig up the dead, but I knew this place was never the place for me. And all the years that rolled by, your son was so good, but now I know that you were a guy with a hole in your soul. It's happened for all these years. No, you can't see it that way, away, away. What happened today? The dancing ones, they really mean it. Mark my words, something's gonna change. Away, away, you gotta be safe. But how do they know when they never see you? And what will you do when they forget your name? When you're up again on the world.
gonna change. Away, away, you got it today. But how do they know when they never seen it? And what will you do when they forget your name? When you forget no one.
I'm Jason Calabrese with the Financial News, and today we're talking to a real Irishman and someone in the money business about what's going on in Ireland with the Celtic Tiger and the banks are hurting so much, the downfall. What's the story here?
Do you really want to know?
I'd love to know.
Well, I'll tell you, it's like what has happened all over the Western world for the last 20 or 30 years. Greed, and more fucking greed, and cheap money. And in Ireland, it's a tragedy what happened to the Tiger. We have... I'd say four causes. We had a stupid fucking government. We had a regulator that was asleep at the wheel. And we had very deceitful and conniving and corrupt developers. And of course, above all, wanking fucking bankers. Wanking bankers. We had these arseholes that for the last 20, 30 years are getting these massive bonuses, these employees and directors of banks, on the misfortune of the working class and getting these huge bonuses and salaries. But... you know, if you and all these arseholes should be thrown in jail and the keys thrown away for the rest of their life. And you know, sir, if you went in and you're unemployed and you wanted to take a loaf of bread out of a store or a supermarket to feed your family, guess what? You'll be up in court for it. These assholes are living all over the world now on the backs of the misfortunate working people. And who's going to pay for all this? We've mortgaged the next generation or two. Who's going to pay for it? The working man. We got the labourer, the small farmer, the fisherman, the nurse, the teacher, the policeman, the fireman, the plumber, the carpenter. Fuck's sake, man, this is a joke.
So I'm sensing a wee bit of discontent?
You are indeed, sir. And by the way, let's not be too cocky in this part of the world, in North America either. All these debts that people have accumulated over the last 30 years, hey, everybody gets their day in the sunshine.
And you know, speaking of the Celtic Tiger and all that you mentioned, you know that Michael Flatley is really from Chicago. Well, that's another story.
Fuck off!
We are experiencing some interesting economic times at the moment in the world, thanks to the brothers Lehman and the Sachs of Goldman. And with the issue that we have in our country is paying massive £1 million bonuses to... bankers whose asses we had to save last year with taxpayers' money. It's a real issue in our country because you know, the money instead of in your country, you know, the money that the government owns is going to go to big business anyway. In our country, we spend our taxpayers' money on really scary things like healthcare. I know it's quite. I know. Don't be afraid. Socialism is not. You can't catch it. You know. It's like, you know, I know it's frightening, and education and shit like that. So, you know, we are cutting our schools and our health budget because we gave billions and billions of dollars to the banks. And the why have we got to give these arseholes a £1 million bonus when last year they lost all their money, nearly lost their jobs? I'll tell you why. It's what we refer to as the L'Oreal excuse. They want us to pay them because they say they're worth it. And I find that, you know, I find that a bluff. It's a bit of a bluff. Because what they say in our country, the bankers, we saved their asses, and they say, if we won't pay them their big bonuses, they'll leave the country and leave us in the lurch. Now, you know, fortunately for you, your bankers don't know there are other countries to go to, do they? That's the wonderful thing about being an American. Because so few of you own passports, you can paint down on the bridge world's largest collection of urban bats because you don't know for fuck if there are any urban bats anywhere else in the world, do you? And even worse than that, you don't give a shit, even if there are. That's the most you've ever seen. That's the world's biggest. So good luck to you, I say. In my country, we just have to put up a sign that says, an interesting collection of urban bats. Which may or may not be the largest in England. A small country off the coast of Europe. I'm just helping you out with the geography this evening. Our bankers, this is the truth, our bankers say if we do not pay these ridiculous bonuses, they will leave How loyal are they? We save their asses, they will leave our countries and fuck off, and they'll all go to a country that respects rich people. Not the United States of America, surprisingly enough, because they find that a little bit too scary. They will go to a country called Abu Dhabi, which is actually not a country at all. It's a city in the desert, the richest city in the world. So we're having a whip round in the United Kingdom to pay airfares to help our bankers get on planes and fuck off to Abu Dhabi where they belong. That's what this song is called. It's called The Last Flight to Abu Dhabi, the richest city in the world. Someone had an argument with me the other night when I played this. It's Abu Dhabi. Abu Dhabi, Abu Dhabi. It's that place in the freaking desert, right?
He was a banker and he made a lot of cash. Taking on the river till he kind of put the crash. Now everybody wants to mimic his income. Johnny packed his bag and he's going on the run. He's in the last flight out to Abu Dhabi, the richest city in the world. He's in the last flight to Abu Dhabi. Put himself a penthouse in a tower very high. Put himself a holiday scheme in Dubai.
Thank you. Yeah. first thought. Then maybe we base things on love a bit more. The feelings you get when someone you know, but it never does speak to, comes out and says hello. But some of the whole world exists in one kiss. You love all the things, it's what you never miss. Gut feelings, the stomach, the head spins around. There's so many. They say that we live in spontaneous times. I'm told by superiors we like it this way, being told what to do in our lives day by day, being ordered and disciplined is natural, they say, and if that's what you want, you can hate me, okay. I don't expect less, it's the thought for the day, but you'll probably deny what you feel anyway. And even deny your own self-denial, even deny your own self-denial, even deny your own self-denial, even deny your own self-denial. At this point, I'll stop, get bottled off stage. If it's down in a book, then you'll rip out a page. Your hatred is good in a frightening way. It can help you let out what you're dying to say. Express what's inside in a momentary rage. From normal suppression, it makes a good change. Should not be the factors to tell us apart from the everyday actors. Live out the roles they were given to play. Suppress all their feelings, they're trying to say that they love it. It's beautiful, it tears them apart. Or they hate it, it's a bastard. They don't know where to start. Try opening your mind and see what falls out. It's really amazing if you don't think about it. Just go on instinct, it's spontaneity. Try reality stop number 35. Queuing for miles to watch. Survive. Freedom of conscience keeps you alive. Keeps you alive. It keeps me alive. There's not many people who like the idea of a life without freedom, but they all live in fear. Uplifting the mind, it's a map that they got. They say that they know who they are, but they're not. They're all individuals under the skin. All of us are told that no one can win. But winners created through money, not skill. It's treacherous, sick, it's even making me ill. It runs up on me, you can tell by these songs. But I went the other way, I think it's wrong. Oh, but it's all too much, it's all out of touch. You're telling me, I can hear you, you see. I can see you can hear, but you cannot believe. Cause your concept of life lies in envy and greed. But just cause you want something, don't mean you need. If you can hear and be conscious, the rest comes for free. To be, to face, this is life, it's a dream.
More fucking greed.
Hey, Geordie, your brow, it's full of cold sweat. And I see by your face that it's causing distress. But you may as well sleep, cos alas, it is true. They're closing your yard, and there's nought you can do. So sleep, bonny lad, don't you worry for me. I'm ours aside you, wherever need be. And now we've need money and need future to see. But we walk at summit, just you wait and see. I've looked in the river, and it's empty, not dry. The tide it is turning, and there's near rescue nigh. The ships are still sailing, but they drift on doon by. And may hand stand idle, didn't you think it's a crime? So sleep, bonny lad, didn't you worry for me. I'm ours aside you, wherever need be. And now we've nae money and nae future to see, but we walk with summit just to wait and see. Who's gonna employ you at 43 when there's choice of the young'uns and soon just like me? I'll stand in queues with a hand outstretched, asking for work, but that's not what you get. So sleep, bonny lad, don't you worry for me. I'm ours to say to you wherever need be. I now have nae money and nae future to see, but we walk with summit just to wait and see. Now look at the young'uns, they know the road well, but they don't know the difference between heaven and hell. Nae diplomas or scholar's degree, just thrown on the heap like at 43. So sleep, bonny lad, don't you worry for me. I'm ours to say to you whenever need be. I now have nae money and nae future to see, but we walk with summit just to wait and see. Well, you're gone doing the south where there's walk in this pier, but a family apart, it'll not walk with that way. Don't gone away, me big bonny lad. Stay here and fight them, we'll do all that we can. So sleep, bonny lad, don't you worry for me. I'm ours to say to you whenever need be. And now we've nae money and nae future to see, but we walk out summit just to wait and see. Just to wait and see.
When first I came to London in the year of 39, the city looked so wonderful and the girls were so divine. But the coppers got suspicious and they soon gave me the knock. I was charged with being the owner of an old Adam clock. Oh, next morning down by Marlborough Street I caused no little stir. The IRA were busy and the telephone did burr. Said the judge, I'm going to charge you with the possession of this machine, and I'm also going to charge you with the wearing of the green. Now says I to him, your honour, if you'll give me half a chance, I'll show you how me small machine can make the peelers dance. It ticks away politely till you get an awful shock, and it ticks away the jelly good night of me old alarm clock. Said the judge, now listen here, my man, and I'll tell you of our plan. For you and all your countrymen, I do not give a damn. The only time you'll take is mine, 10 years in Dartmoor Dock. And you can count it by the ticking of your old alarm clock. Now this lonely Dartmoor city would put many in the jigs. The cell, it isn't pretty, and it isn't very big. Should I long ago have left the place if I had only got a me couple of sticks of jelly good night of me old alarm clock?
Oh, farewell, streets of sorrow. And farewell, you streets of pain. I'll not return to feel more sorrow, nor to see more young men slain. Through the last 6 years I've lived through terror, and in the darkened streets the pain. Oh, how I long to find some solace. In my mind I curse the strain. So farewell, you streets. and farewell your streets of pain. No, I'll not return to feel more sorrow, nor to see more young men slain.
There were 6 men in Birmingham and Guildford this far. They were picked up and tortured and framed by the law. And the film got promotion, but they're still doing time for being Irish in the wrong place and at the wrong time. In Ireland they'll put you away in the maze. In England they'll keep you for 7 days. God help you if ever you caught on these shores. The coppers need someone and they walk through that door. You'll be counting years for 5 and 10, growing old in a lonely hell. Round the yard in the stinking cell, from wall to wall and back again. A curse on the judges, the coppers and screws. Torture the innocent, wrongly accused. For a price of promotion and justice to sell, might the judge be their judges when they rot down in hell. You'll be counting years for 5 and 10, growing old in a lonely hell. Round the yard in a lousy cell, from wall to wall and back again. Swears they can't have the sins in their heads. Well, over in Ireland, the Mormon like dead, kicked down and shut in the back of the head. You be counting years for 5 and 10, growing old in a freezing hell. Round the yard in the lousy cell, from wall to wall and back again. Counting years for 5 and 10, growing old in a lonely hell.
So I'm outside the Anarchist Book Fair here in Montreal with Andrea Langlois and Ron Sikolsky, who are two of the editors of a book that was just released called Islands of Resistance, Pirate Radio in Canada. I guess to begin with, can you guys tell me how the idea for this book came about?
Yeah, actually, it's very appropriate that we're here because Andrea and Marion van der Zon, the other editor of the book, and I met at the Victoria Anarchist Book Fair, and we decided to put together with a bunch of other folks a group called Black Ink, the BC Anarchist Writers Group. And we then met together several months later, and one of the things that came out of that was the idea for this book. So it was germinated there at the BC Anarchist Writers Group. Mm-hmm. Retreat advance.
Okay. Now, of course, you know, pirate radio might be kind of either an underappreciated or just not a very well-known phenomenon in Canada. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, some of the research process and how you guys started to uncover these stories?
Yeah, it was, I think it was really fascinating. I became aware of pirate radio Personally, here in Montreal, there was pirate radio used in the demonstrations in 2003 against the World Trade Organization. And Marion had also had a project here called TAR, which was Temporary Autonomous Radio. And Ron has also done a book on pirate radio. So between the three of us, we basically threw a call out to all of their networks. And it became a little bit like a process of investigative journalism, in a sense, where we just kept digging and following leads and trying to uncover examples from across Canada of pirate radio. And I think we came up with quite a wealth of it, but there's probably many, many instances that never came across our inboxes, so to speak.
Can you guys talk about some of the examples that you came across of pirate radio, either currently or in the past in Canada?
Well, I mean, maybe the place to begin is to talk about the different types of pirate radio that are in the book rather than individual stations. So they range from the mobile kinds of stations like Temporary Autonomous Radio that Marion is involved with, to community-based stations like the one that I'm involved with called Tree Frog Radio on an island in BC, to people using pirate radio in protest situations, which is the theme of the article that Andrea and Gretchen did, to people using pirate radio for artistic forms of expression that wouldn't ordinarily make it on the airwaves. So there's a variety of approaches to pirate radio. We didn't want to just focus on one. Some are very political, some focus on the spoken word in a very typically political way. Others are political in the way they challenge assumptions about culture and about art and the way in which technology can be used in a subversive context.
Mm. And I guess like one interesting thing just looking through this book too is, and you kind of touch on this, how pirate radio kind of almost encompasses many different worlds, but you have people who are using it for cultural, artistic purposes, and then for, you know, very political purposes. Would you say that those are kind of two different camps? Is there any kind of tension there, or does it just kind of flow together?
I would say what we did find is that while in the U.S., because there's more repression against pirate radio, there's a bit more of a movement. So we didn't really identify anything that we would call maybe a movement, but are hoping to see maybe more of a movement in pirate radio in Canada. So I don't know if there's tensions between people yet. I do think that some people like Marion Van de Zon, our co-editor, is very interested in sound art and does a lot of that, but also has the Temporary Autonomous Radio, TAR, her project that she'll... that isn't without a political bent in some ways. So I think that there's definitely overlap. I think one of the most inspiring examples that we've come across is examples like in Barrier Lake in northern Quebec, where we have an Indigenous community using pirate radio to have a community radio station on their community that's creating links between different generations, that it's enabling communication within the community, but also is really a way to engage youth and maintain language, which is, I think just a phenomenal example of how pirate radio is being used currently in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think one of the purposes that we had in doing this book was to link those different kinds of ways of using pirate radio, because we see the connections rather than trying to see them as exclusive and contradictory.
Mm, okay. And I guess, maybe just the basic question, what is pirate radio? How could we define that?
Well, I'll begin, I guess. Pirate radio, in our definition, is unlicensed radio, so that for radio to be pirate radio, one of the ways in which you can identify it is that it's contrary to corporate or state control. And one of the forms of state control is licensing. And corporate control often takes the form of advertising. So the kind of pirate radio we're talking about, our definition of pirate radio falls along those kinds of lines.
Mm. I think one interesting thing, just like in the preface of the book that is mentioned, is the fact that, we're very much in the digital age right now. Some people have gone as far as saying radio as a medium is dead, or it's going the way of the dinosaurs. But this book tends to disagree. Could you... elaborate on that.
I think that when television came into existence, people said that radio was dead, right? So I think that we're seeing radio become a bit more complex, and we're seeing things be dual. Like, we might have something on the radio, we might have it podcast, we might have it web streamed. But I think, you know, to say that radio is dead is a very North American centric way of seeing things, whereas around the world radio is very much alive. And I think even here it's very much alive, that people, it's so accessible, all you need is your radio, it's transportable. And I think you know, especially in other countries, it's such a important form of media that I would hate to see radio die. I think it's going to change. I think communications mediums are changing the way we communicate, but I don't think radio is going to be gone. And I think even as we open up new spaces, you know, people feel like because of Facebook they can communicate. I think it's still really important to continue struggling to be able to have our voices heard on the actual airwaves as well. You know, it's not that kind of media is not enough, I don't think.
Yeah, I think our point of view was why not have both? Why have to choose one or the other? And those choices are often false choices that we're forced into, because we're taught to reject what the old technology is and accept the new technology as a replacement for the old technology, rather than seeing them as working together in some way. So that if you think of something that, you know, within recent years, when CDs first came along, that vinyl was supposed to be dead. Well, now you're seeing a resurgence of interest in vinyl. And MP3s come along, CDs are supposed to be dead, but yet CDs are still there. Why not have all those different formats available at once?
Mm. Another interesting dynamic, I think there's so many interesting angles in this book, is, and you touched on it a little bit, Andrea, is the indigenous perspective on radio, and how indigenous communities are using pirate radio as a means to assert their self-determination and sovereignty. So can you just expand a little bit on that?
What was really fascinating, actually, is there is a chapter on the history of pirate radio in Canada that kind of looks at how radio developed. But in our research, we also found that there's actually an indigenous history to pirate radio in Canada. The people who set up the co-op station in Vancouver, which is, you know, very big now, they were actually mentored by people doing pirate radio with an indigenous community. So, and in doing radio. So I think there's that history. I think that, you know, from what some of the writers who contributed here have written, is that in terms of looking at the licensing process, that if we look at indigenous territories as places of sovereignty, then maybe that's just a moot point, that indigenous communities don't maybe have to even think about applying for licensing because they have sovereignty rights in Canada. So I think that's really important. But I think the examples that we've seen, it just shows an amazing source of resistance and a way to capture oral culture and to resist colonization through the use of media.
Mm. Yeah, and I think many times in communities on a reserve, radio is not considered an old technology to be thrown away, but a very much a part of community life. So to be able to have your own radio station means something very significant.
Mm. And I guess... finally, we're here at the Anarchist Book Fair in Montreal, and you guys are tabling with this book. So I guess kind of the question of the day, looking at, you know, pirate radio and anarchist practice, what do we see as the link between the two?
Well, I think one of the things about pirate radio is that it's transgressive. So it challenges some assumptions about whether you need permission to do anything. And so if we're talking about autonomy as a key defining factor of anarchy, then pirate radio is one way of creating an autonomous zone on the air. Now, I live in a community that is autonomous in many ways. It's an island community. There's no cops that are part of the community. There's a volunteer fire department. There's a free store for the exchange of clothing and anything else. There's a whole approach to living that is based on autonomy. So when we introduced the idea of pirate radio, it was natural. People understood it immediately. And they didn't necessarily define themselves as anarchists, but they understood it in an intuitive way. And I think that's when anarchy is most potent, when it isn't just a slogan to be, you know, in someone's life, but it has a meaning that goes beyond just the word.
And I guess the last question I wanted to ask was one of the kind of, I guess, stated goals of this book, this anthology, is to kind of use it as a kind of a jumping point, or to actually start to maybe reinvigorate, re-energize a pirate radio movement out of this. So, could you just talk a little bit about that and your hopes for this book?
Yeah, my inspiration in doing projects like this is also to look at the undocumented. You know, we could not find very many writings, if any at all, barely on pirate radio in Canada, even though it's been around and there's been a lot of practice. So documenting, I think, is a really important part of building movements. And I think I always hope to inspire. It'd be great to illustrate how accessible it can be. You know, people can order a transmitter toolkit off the internet and start up their own station tomorrow after soldering a few pieces together. You know, it is simple, but it also can be a way to bring people together on a project. And since getting here, we've heard of people who are thinking of starting pirate radio projects here in Montreal, which is great. So I think even our website, islandsofresistance.ca, people can go there and listen to audio clips to see what pirate radio sounds like, because without the sound, it's, you know, paper's great, but it's awesome to go there and listen to the people doing pirate radio in Canada and maybe start posting ideas there, and maybe we can kind of create a place to actually at least have a bit of information together about pirate radio.
Yeah, the article that I did in the book is called Squatting the Airwaves, and I start off with a quote from Colin Ward, who wrote a book called Anarchy in Action. Colin Ward just died recently, within the last couple of months, an anarchist writer. And even though he wrote about squatting, housing-related squatting, he never thought to include pirate radio as a form of squatting. My article tries to expand the definition of squatting to squatting the airwaves. And so hopefully this book will be expansive. We know that there's a squatters movement. People talk about a squatters movement. Why not include, you know, within that movement in a more, you know, a full-blown way, the idea of radio as a place in which autonomy can be created.
Great. Well, thank you both for taking the time to talk with us.
Great, thank you.
Wonderful to be on CKET, thank you.
But I could not care.
Greed, greed, and more fucking greed.
Just for the fucking crack.
Greed, greed, and more fucking greed.
Just for the fucking crack.